In our imperfect world, there are some within our world who are calling us out to be number one, to be the first, and to think of everyone else around us as number two, or three, or four, in a list of who's good and who's better. My understanding of this call is to our hearts, that we should be the best of all the other people in the world. There are none like us. We are on top, calling us to place ourselves in the front of the line. Well, when I think about what Jesus calls us to, it's just the opposite. Jesus doesn't call us to have everyone else serve our needs. Jesus calls us to serve everyone else. What I'm trying to get across to you is the same thing I'm trying to get across to the two boys who were up here this morning. Jesus is not an easy person to follow. Oh, yes, he's loving and kind and generous and faithful and true, but what he asks of us is to change who we are. And that's not easy. For most of us, that's a very hard lesson to learn. Did you feel a little bit uncomfortable when I talked about Jesus' call about divorce? Did any of you just go through your mind that, yes, isn't it cute that children believe so simply, but then Jesus asks us to be just as cute? For all of us who are upper middle class, maybe even middle class, does it make you feel the least bit uncomfortable when Jesus asked that rich man, just sell everything you have, give it to the poor, and come and follow me? Does it make you cringe a little bit? Is that what Christianity is? Is that really what we're supposed to do? Here, this was a good man. He followed the Ten Commandments all his life. But Jesus asked him to go one step further. Put yourself in the hands of God. Come follow me. He could have been one of the 12. He could have been Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John. And he just bowed his head and he walked away. Does it make anybody feel uncomfortable? Does me. I own my own home now. Preachers aren't supposed to own their own homes. They're supposed to be poor. But life has been good to me. Jesus is indeed kind-hearted, forgiving. Jesus is a generous man, but he can also make demands upon us that seem almost impossible to keep. When you think about what's the spiritual lesson behind all the things that I've said so far, the first thing, and I believe this is the first touch of God in all of our hearts. I mean, the fact that you're here this morning at all is because God has somehow touched your heart and my heart. and we say, I'm going to go to church. Maybe I'll get something there today. Maybe I won't, but maybe I will. I'm going to try. You know, that's what I said to the boys. Just keep trying. The first touch of God is to develop a humble spirit. Even that I do need God at all. When you think about Adam and Eve in the garden, what was the real issue that was going on? You ate an apple? Okay. That's a nice thing. I don't know how bad that is. But what was really bad, what was really going on, and what really happens with us and God, is we say pretty much what Adam did. Thank you very much, God. This is a really nice place. But God, I can handle this on my own. I don't need you. I can handle my life. Just leave me be. Let me make my own choices. I don't want you sticking your nose into my business and telling me what's right, what's wrong. I can handle that. That's the problem. Somebody has to make some kind of rule so that we know what to do. It's interesting how God does this too. My two images of God, and I think I've done this story before. God is either doing this, come on, come over here, I have something for you. Or he's saying, try it, try it. And where we go wrong is we say, I can handle this. I don't need you, God. Well, if the first touch of God in our hearts is a call to humility, holy cow, can we do it? That's the issue, my friends. Sometimes I think that the people outside, the reason why they might not be here is because they realize that about Jesus. They realize that it's a high calling that we have responded to. It's something that matters. It's not just a religious obligation. You know, well, if I'm a Christian, that means I go to church. No, that's not what being a Christian means. I'm not saying it's bad to go to church. I'm glad you're all here. But that's not what it means. It means that you love everyone. You forgive someone who even hurts you. It means that you show mercy on those who can't take care of themselves. It says you even forgive your enemies. It says you use a little self-control in saying I do everything basically to please me. Well, okay. That's the hard part of our faith, my friends. And so when God touches us, the first thing that we can notice in our life is the call to humble yourself before God. The call to humble yourself before others. You can believe what you want, but Jesus does not say, we're number one. He doesn't even want to get into that whole argument. He just says, I want you to serve. I want you to be a people that draw God into their life and try their best to follow a God who is perfect when we are imperfect. I want to tell you one story about one man that I know very well who got into trouble over this very issue, because this man, he loved to judge people like you and me. He loved to say that Christians are basically hypocrites. Okay? I'm going to tell you about my dad. My dad was a man who loved to argue. He could have been on any debate team you ever thought to set up. He just loved it. He was not a bad man. He was a good man. Taught me lots of things that I will owe him as long as I live. But he loved to call Christians hypocrites, and he loved to get people like you and me in a corner and said, "Come on now, you don't believe all that baloney, do you? Come on, straighten up." He would love to do that. And that went on for most of my childhood. As a result, I never went to Sunday school. I never went to church as a child. But my mother had grown up in a very devout Presbyterian home. And finally, when I was about 14 or 15 years old, she stood my dad up in the corner and she said, "I'm going back to church. I need to go back to church, and I'm taking John with me." And he didn't like it. But I'll tell you, the reason why I'm in the Reformed Church in America is because when she walked out of that house dragging this 230-pound football player from high school behind her, my mother was no big woman, but she's dragging me down the street one block. There were only two Reformed churches in the whole state of Arizona, and I happened to live one block from one. That's why I'm in the Reformed Church. That's why I'm standing here this morning, because she did that. And I can remember going that day, and I can remember after the church, the pastor was standing by the door, shaking hands with everybody, and we went up to him, and she introduced us, and he said, "It's nice to have you here, Mrs. Norton. Where's your husband?" And she said, "You don't want to know where he is." The end result of that was my pastor, as a boy then, he had been a missionary in China for 20 years, and he was used to being around a lot of people who didn't believe what he did. And he kind of took this challenge up, and he went down to my dad's gas station. My dad owned a gas station. And he started to buy his gas from my dad. And now I'll tell you the story as my father would tell the story. He says, "I got him in my office one day, and I told him, 'You leave me alone. You leave my wife alone. You leave my son John alone. All you want is my money. And besides, you and all the rest of those people back in your church, you're all just a bunch of hypocrites.'" And the minister looked at him for a while, didn't say anything. And finally he said, "You know, Frank," that's my dad, "you're right. We are all hypocrites, and I'm probably the worst one of them all." He says, "I probably know more about Jesus than all the rest of those people. Maybe a half of them all put together, I know more about him. And I don't do what Jesus calls me to do either, all the time. And neither do my people. We fail all the time, but we try." And he said, "You know, one more thing, Frank," he said, "one more like you wouldn't hurt us at all. You'd fit in really nice with us." A hypocrite like you are too, Frank. And that's when my dad began to believe. When he had to humble his own spirit. When he had to come to the realization that he really wasn't any better than anybody in the church, and nobody in the church was better than him. That we all have to be on our knees before God. Well, That was my father. He thought everyone was hypocritical. Of course, you know, he wasn't the only kind of person there was in the world. There are others who say, if I walk into church, the place will fall down. You know, I'm not good enough to go there. Well, that guy and my dad, well, they're two different people and they have different problems, but that's worth another sermon. But the point that I need to make with all of you this morning is the fact that our faith begins with our humility. And that is, God loves everybody, and that we should attempt to do the same. It begins when we make efforts not to let those things that smolder in our hearts of resentment toward others. It's when we really try to say, I believe. I've seen this so many times in my life. When a four-year-old or a five-year-old will sit down here and you ask them, do you believe in Jesus? And they say, yes. I want to believe like that. I want to believe even when it seems to be not very smart to believe. I want to give my money away even when it seems like I'm just throwing money down a hole in the ground. I want to believe when it makes no sense to believe. That's what Jesus calls us to do. Now, I've got nothing against intellect. I've got nothing against spending your money wisely. I've got nothing against the church. For those who say it is impossible to believe in God, impossible to follow Jesus, then all I want you to remember about that is what Jesus said to his disciples. For mortals, to follow Jesus really is impossible. But not for God in our hearts. For God can forgive us anything. God only requires that we keep trying. He only requires that you drag your 230-pound son up the street and start going to church again, and it might mean that you have some more fights with your husband over it. That's what it means. It means that person who has hurt you, who has done an unkindness to you, you say, I'm going to lay it down and forget about it. I'm just going to keep on trying my best to follow Jesus. It means that you let the River Ministry stay down there and keep doing the good work that they're doing. Even though when you say, maybe some of those people deserve what they got. No one deserves anything other than the right to do the best they can with their life. So, my friends, we live in an imperfect world, and we have a God who calls us to be perfect. Do your best. And God will understand. And I'll tell you this, this is what I believe. If we are going to recognize each other when we cross the border into the other world, if we are going to know, I don't know. I don't know anything about heaven other than that I came from some place and I go back to some place and I'll call it heaven. We may be surprised who we see there. Because God is not a human being. God understands things that we can never understand. And God will act and always do in every single case for every single person on the face of the earth who has ever lived, God will always do what is right and good and kind and generous and loving and forgiving. I want to believe that like a little child. It's the only thing that makes sense to me. Believe that gospel and go forth to live your life in peace. Amen.